Welcome to the UTG podcast, and today I'm joined by Dr. Rhiannon McAleer.
Yes.
I've pronounced that correct.
You have, yeah.
Well, that's the first hurdle overcome. And obviously, you work for the Bible Society, and today we're going to be discussing the report that you produced called A Quiet Revival. But before we maybe get into that, let's maybe just understand a little bit the Bible Society. Who are they and what do they do?
Sure. Well, Bible Society is a charity. We're a part of an international movement or federation of Bible societies around the world. And we've been around a while. We were founded in 1804 by William Wilberforce and other members of the Clapham sect. And our mission, we have a royal charter as well, is to distribute and circulate the scriptures for wider use. So today in England and Wales, that means that while we do still give out Bibles, especially to people who might otherwise find them hard to get, like prisoners or perhaps refugees, a lot of our work is about Bible engagement. So helping people access the Bible, whether they're Christian or not, and really overcoming those barriers to being able to read the Bible for themselves. But around the world, our work might be around translation or distribution or, again, what we call Bible engagement. So we support some literacy programs as well as discipleship programs. And we really want to see a movement around the Bible, around the world for all peoples, because we believe the Bible is life-changing.
Amen. Excellent. That's really helpful. I think we'll obviously put a link to the Bible Society webpage in our show notes, but also to the report that we're going to talk about today. But from your specific role within the Bible Society, how would you describe that?
The report.
Oh, sorry, your
my role.
Your personal role.
I'm the Director of Research and Impact. So my job is to help Bible Society learn what's going on in England and Wales around the Bible and Christianity and around the world. So we do this with lots of different research tools. Part of it is surveying, as Quiet Revival points out, but we also do a lot of interviewing and focus groups. We're just interested in what's the place of the Bible today? What are the opportunities around it? What are the barriers that people have? And can we take that knowledge and really apply it so that we're more effective in our mission? And we want everyone to kind of benefit from the work that we do. So we do publish reports like Quiet Revival to help churches in their own mission. We have a global research program as well that maybe we can talk about another time.
That's helpful, because obviously key words that you talked about there, which I know that there are some people that I know who will focus groups and automatically their kind of suspicious glasses are being drawn down their nose and to say, well, what relevance or help is that? But maybe just to kind of give a broad kind of idea that this report that was done is basically saying that there is an uptake in engagement with church and with the Bible, especially amongst the younger generation. So that, in a sense, is the broad kind of statement. And I wanted to maybe just spend a little bit of time to begin with to kind of ask the question, okay, how have the Bible Society arrived at that conclusion?
Sure. We commissioned a large survey in 2018. That was 19,000 adults in England and Wales. And we did that through the YouGov panel. So YouGov are probably Britain's best known polling agency, and they're certainly one of the most reliable. So they're used by the government, academics, businesses, policymakers, to really understand what does Britain think, what's Britain doing. They're generally considered to be fairly reliable and a useful benchmark about what's going on. So that survey was designed to help us understand what do adults in England and Wales, whether they're Christian or not Christian, think about Christianity, the church, and the Bible. And as part of that, we asked them a few behaviour questions, like how often would you say you've been to church in the past year? And we've run that survey a few times in various ways. It's quite a long survey, so we sometimes run bits of it for different purposes. And we ran it in 2022, and we found the results were quite difficult to interpret, to be honest. There was a lot of uncertainty in the data set. So a lot of people saying they didn't know, a lot of people saying they neither agreed nor disagreed with all our statements. And it kind of just really felt like there was a bit of pandemic shock going on, a lot of uncertainty. And that was really reflecting what we were hearing through our other ways of listening, that people were feeling mixed up. But we felt like we needed to run the survey again to really get a sense of what happened. So 2024, we ran it again at scale. So we ran it with 13,000 adults. The 19,000 and the 13,000 are both very big samples. This is far bigger than a typical survey would be, which would be between 1 and 3,000 people. And it was very surprising what came back. We found a growth in the number of adults who say that they go to church at least once a month or more, but this was primarily being driven by younger adults, so those under 35, and that had basically quadrupled, which was just phenomenal. We also saw that Bible reading across the church had gone up, so we were starting to see across multiple metrics a kind of more confident church, if you like, to what we'd seen in 2018. This is really interesting, but kind of makes sense sociologically. There's been a huge change for the church in England and Wales over the last sort of century, really. So the kind of bit that's left, if you like, is sort of a core. So the fact that it was looking more confident is interesting. And regardless of growth, regardless of size, a really good place to be. But we also saw what...
So just on that particular point then, so... What we're saying then is that whilst numbers of people identifying as Christians or going to church has gone down, or is it a case that the people who are left believe the Bible more?
Oh, it's both. So, what we're saying is compared to 2018, we've seen more people saying they're going to church regularly. So that's an increase.
Okay.
But those people who are there are not belonging without believing.
Right, okay.
So it's both growth and deepening, which is really important. But if we were to extend that time scale and look over 50 years, then the church is still shrunk in size. But that kind of core is perhaps stronger in a way. But that's using bigger data sets over a longer period of time. But our surveys are looking at 2018 and 2024. Yeah. And that's where we see the growth, but also a deepening. So it's... Yeah, it's not a case of people turning up for community because they want somewhere to go on a Sunday morning, but they're not really engaged. Yeah. Every indication we have of the church goers in the survey is they are engaged and they are committed. Mm-hmm. But there are some warning signs around Bible discipleship that perhaps we'll talk about. Yeah. But the other important thing was we also saw a growth in what we would call spiritual openness in the general population. So people who aren't currently Christian and going to church, particularly among Gen Z, that younger generation, on all kind of interest in the Bible.
Sorry, just 2 seconds. For the sake of the non-marketeers, Gen Z, who are we defining as Gen Z?
So in our survey, when we look at what we call younger people, we mean under 35s, and then young adults is 18 to 24s.
Okay. But
Gen Z, I'm not sure what the current boundaries are in the marketing thinking, but you're looking at probably an age range between those who are currently 16 up to about late 20s,
yeah,
early 30s.
And then millennials are...
Yeah, they're probably...
A bit older.
Yeah, mid-30s into the 40s now. So when we're talking about young people, we're no longer talking about millennials.
Yeah.
Sadly for me. and there is definitely a generational kind of shape to the data where you see the difference between older millennials and this kind of emerging young adult generation coming through.
So I know that there's a particular page on the website where it talks about frequently asked questions about that. So if people want to think more about how reliable this is, that they can obviously look at the frequently asked questions and they can read for themselves the kind of the methodology behind the research and the robustness. But just very briefly, how consistent is your findings with the findings of others?
Yeah, we are the most recent survey out of this kind of scale. So it is a change compared to a couple of older surveys. So we kind of just have to see what they do in the future, really. But there is a vast body of evidence that all points in the same general direction of what we're reporting, just to different scales, really. So across multiple Catholic dioceses, for example, we're seeing increased numbers of baptisms and conversions. Baptists together are reporting more baptisms than they've done for decades, as well as 57% of their churches are reporting increased growth in attendance. The Evangelical Alliance did a survey with a number of their members and found that attendance was up across evangelical churches as well. Even in churches like the Church of England that actually collect their statistics, they are not yet at a pre-pandemic level, and our survey for the Church of England suggests they would be more there, more stable. So we've got a slight kind of warmth compared to what their own figures support, but they've had 4 years of growth, and that shouldn't be taken lightly, particularly for a church which is disproportionately older. So what we don't know from the attendance figures is who's attending, right? So it's entirely possible that you can have a lot of older people leaving church for because of age reasons, and younger people coming in who've never explored church before, but your numbers wouldn't reflect this really significant kind of social trend that we think other data sets are pointing to. So even on the surface, kind of look, you know, you've got this 4 years of growth, and there are many unanswered questions about the nature of that growth. So there are other things as well all over the world, especially the Western world, upticks in Catholic churches. We're seeing Switzerland, Finland reporting rise in evangelical churches. There's a lot of data points all pointing in the same way, just to varying degrees.
Okay, so that's helpful to know that this isn't just an isolated kind of report. I suppose one of the other questions I know that will be in some people's mind is this idea of, some of the questions are framed around the idea of your belief in God or gods. Mm. So that's quite a broad kind of a question. So how, if here am I, an evangelical Bible-believing Christian, how much confidence can I have in this report that it relates to people that think like I do?
I mean, at general level, I would highly caution against that. And I think anyone who's interested in mission beyond the church should hold a level of caution that when you use even the word God, that the person you're talking to is thinking about God in the same way as you. And our question is structured very broadly. It's to what extent do you believe in a God, gods, or higher power? And it's done deliberately because we're trying to cast that net really wide, because basically trying to get a sense of what does spiritual belief look like in Britain today? Because when people say they believe in God, they are not, for the most part, thinking in the way that Christians think about salvation and who God is according to our faith. And that is one thing that I really just think is so important for Christians to get their heads around, is when we haven't got a common language, and it's okay to be aware of that and to approach these conversations with a posture of curiosity. So like, you know, you say you believe in God, but like, what does that mean to you? And more often than not, it will go in an interesting direction. So in terms of like, how does it help us identify core believers, if you like, there are multiple ways the survey's built then. So you take those people who say there's definitely a God. We have a follow-up question which asks, what kind of God do you believe in? Mm-hmm. So there's various points on that in terms of things like a God who's involved in the world, a God who created the world but is not involved with it, a spirit or life force, all of those kind of things. So if you were interested in that question, like, the data can answer it. We haven't published it yet. And what we do see of the church-going Christians is it's nearly always a creator God who's involved in the world. So if anyone's reading our report, when they're seeing church-going Christians, the chances are they would be recognisably church-going Christians. But there's always a fuzzy edge, and that's okay.
Yeah, no, that's helpful, because what you're not saying is that everything that this report is saying about an increased interest in spirituality is equal to spiritual revival, the relevance of the gospel.
Yes.
It's just a case of people are more curious.
And that's really important as well about the missional moment, right? That 15 years ago, 10 years ago, we were under the dominant cultural narrative was the new atheists. Mm-hmm. And the questions that Christians needed to be able to answer were, is there a God? Is it rational to believe in a God? These very classic apologetics questions. But what seems to be emerging now is that whole narrative is so much weaker. Like the narrative of the new atheists is just not as strong as it was. And you see a bigger cultural acceptability of Christianity. So people like Tom Holland and Jordan Peterson talking about Christianity openly. Footballers, musicians, proudly mentioning that they're Christian, thanking God for their achievements. It's a kind of culturally acceptable, I guess, is what I would say. And part of that, though, is also an acceptance of spirituality in its broad sense. So people who aren't on TikTok, you might not be aware of this thing called Witch Talk, which is this really interesting subculture around younger adults practicing magical practices, for example. Astrology seems to be having a bit of a renaissance, crystals. So the question is not, is there a God? The question is, why Christianity? Mm. Like, what does, of all these options I've got on the table in front of me, why would I go to church? Like, what is it that you have to offer? And I think we need to get our heads around this cultural shift that Christianity is one option among many. And while we think there is a genuine interest in Christianity, it's not kind of a victory, right? Like, this is not all everyone's prayers answered. There is a lot more work to do, and the future of what the church looks like is still unfolding.
Yeah, no, I think that's really helpful. Was when you think about the fact that there is an increase of an interest in the Bible and not just church, what was kind of, why are people interested in the Bible?
It's a really interesting question, because our sense overall is that biblical literacy has declined a lot over the last generations, really. So what is a bit of an unanswered question for us is, like, what is for a young adult today the cultural memory of the Bible? Like, do they have any cultural memory? In which case, is their interest just a genuine, like, I know that this is a holy book and I'm interested in knowing what it as a holy book might have to say to me? Or is it slightly deeper in terms of, I think the Bible might help me live my life better because of its kind of cultural authority that I might be vaguely aware of? Like, that's not clear to us yet, but it's still a really great starting point. There has been, obviously Jordan Peterson has talked a lot about the Bible, and particularly speaking to young men, and that comes through quite strongly in our data, is among young people who don't go to church, men are far more likely than young women to say they're interested in learning more about the Bible. So I think there is something in the cultural kind of consciousness that the Bible is an interesting and valuable text in some form.
In a kind of slightly more theoretical way?
I think at this time, potentially, rather than this is a place for me to encounter God and go deeper in that sort of way. But yeah, it's really fascinating, but it comes through... It's always been there. It was in the 2018 survey that there is a proportion of non-churchgoers who are interested in learning more about the Bible. Typically, that might have been older people who maybe went to Sunday school but didn't go to church now, but had a sense of the Bible. It's kind of like they're nostalgic for its stories, that kind of thing. Or sometimes when women have had children for the first time, a sense that the Bible might have something to say to help them raise their children, like this moral guide. And that comes through even now in the 2024 survey, that people think it's good for children to know Bible stories.
Yeah.
They think it's good in society on the whole. But it's that personal relevance, that the Bible has something to offer me personally. That's the gap.
Yeah, and I noticed that in the report, that was a key change in the statistics. Like 60% or so, I think, were saying that it was good for kids, but only 24% saying it was relevant to me personally.
Yes.
And that is, obviously, it's a worrying kind of perception that people have, that the Bible isn't relevant. And the fact that you had some of the key words that people associate with the Bible is like outdated, contradictory. So what your report has highlighted is the fact that, yes, there is a growing openness and maybe even a growing church attendance, but actual confidence in the Bible in general terms isn't there in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is really important for anyone who reads the report, is to have their head around both of those stories, that yes, there's this good news story for the church, but the vast majority of adults in England and Wales don't read the Bible and don't care. They don't read the Bible. Like, they're just not interested in learning more. We call those the brutal facts. And that is kind of the reality of our kind of cultural moment, as well as this increase sort of spirituality, increased spiritual curiosity and increased interest in the Bible. But the kind of average, if you like, is still one that leans towards apathy and outdated, basically. But there's real opportunity and real hope. So our research also picks up that for non-churchgoers, family and friends are big influencers on whether they're interested in going to church or reading the Bible. So we think that if we can empower Christians to feel confident in their ability to read the Bible, to speak about the Bible with others, then that will affect the people around them in a really positive way and allow kind of this spiritual atmosphere to flourish even further.
Yeah, I picked up on that as well, that there was this kind of, that a lot less people were influenced by celebrities to read the Bible, but they were much more influenced by family and friends who they knew and trusted to read the Bible.
Yeah.
Which I think that's a healthier thing. Yeah. I think if we're constantly led by celebrities, then that's not a good thing. What about that has maybe brings us to the issue of relationship? Because there is when we think about a younger generation, that whilst that they're more connected technologically, but actually in real term relationships, they're much more disconnected than any other generation. So what would your thoughts be in the data and the research that you've done in terms of how important is relationship?
Oh, I mean, it's so important. And our wider research really points to the significance of mentors for strong kind of relationships with the Bible in adulthood. But certainly the Quiet Revival data points to, exactly as you've said, people saying they value the kind of opinion of their friends and family more than celebrities. And I'm sure in reality, the two are kind of completely intertwined, and it's just how people have answered a survey. But that in itself gives you an indication of what they think they should value. In terms of younger people, we see one of our warning signs in the data is of our young Christians. Young Christians, those aged under 35, are more likely than older Christians, particularly those who are older than 55, to say they find it hard to find people to learn from when it comes to the Bible. They find it hard to find good resources about the Bible, but they also show such passion for the Bible. Like, they want to know it better. They're like, multiple parts of the survey really point to their enthusiasm for the Bible. But then there's this tension of, but who do I learn from? And where do I go to learn from it? So I would really love churches to think about that kind of intergenerational mission and discipleship, and what kind of journeying with the Bible in community looks like. Because if you've got one thing I've heard so much from people who are experiencing what we see in the Quiet Revival is, These people just turned up to church. Like, they might have had a spiritual experience, but others are exploring faith online, and they might be listening to podcasters and or YouTubers or reading the Bible on their own before they even step foot in a church. And I think that transition from this kind of individual journey of faith to living in community, mm-hmm. I think that is a difficult step, and one that perhaps as a church we haven't needed to worry about so much in the past sort of few decades of evangelism and discipleship. I think it's a priority now. So relationships make us stronger as a church. It's what people are craving. We see that in the data as well, that our young adults are more likely than older adults to say, well, less likely, sorry, to say, I feel close to people in my local area. It's particularly a particular issue for young men who feel that they're not able to say they feel close to people in their area. So yeah, absolutely, like really taking seriously that interpersonal relationships. And for the Bible, the Bible is meant to be read in community as much as on our own. We learn new things through it when we read it with each other, when we're confronted by what each other is seeing in the text, and really making space for that, I think, is very important.
So as you think about that younger generation looking for help, what are they looking for in that? What gives them confidence for somebody to be trustworthy?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there is some data that's come out from an organisation called Youth for Christ, which is suggesting that kind of trust is a bit of an issue for Gen Z. So when in that survey they ask, what helps you make decisions about spirituality, or what's shaped your thoughts about spirituality? I can't quite remember the question. Compared to when they ran it in previous years, myself has come up a lot on the list. So it's like they feel they have to filter a lot, and ultimately they're the ones who weigh it up and decide what kind of works for them, which is quite a burdensome sort of place.
And problematic.
So I don't think there's any kind of formula that anyone can easily pick up to say, like, well, this is how we build trust. But everything I would suggest we know is it's going to be about time. It's going to be about honesty. It's going to be about really good listening, like not pretending that we have all the answers straight away, like really understanding like what are the questions you've got, and kind of bearing with people that they might not have the ability to answer that question. That's another thing I've heard a lot about from churches who are seeing this, where they're like, well, what's drawn you in? People are like, I don't know. I just feel it's right to be here. And so making space for conversation, just really connecting on that that interpersonal level, and not being seen as a means to an end. I think that I've heard that from a few young people who are exploring faith, is like they don't want to be treated as different. Like, you're the young people in the church. Like, how do we make sure we're looking after you properly? And they're like, well, I just want to be part of this thing, not singled out. I don't need everything sent to me in text messages or something. You know, like, just treat me as a full human being. Treat me as you care about me, and you've got that love for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really helpful. I suppose then, as you're thinking, as obviously we're running out of time, but as you think about the takeaways, like, what would you, if you were speaking to a believer, and you've done this research, you've produced this report, what kind of things would you like them to start doing?
Sure. Well, I mean, firstly, I would say it's okay if you're not seeing this. Like, this is a quiet revival. We're not, the data does not suggest that everyone would be seeing this in all places. And in some places, it might literally just be a couple of people who wouldn't have otherwise been there a little bit ago. So don't kind of worry if this isn't your reality yet, but kind of consider perhaps praying for others who are experiencing this, thinking about kind of joining up with other churches. All of these sorts of things are important. But in terms of what I would like everyone to do is really invest in that Bible discipleship. So making space for reading the Bible together. We know that's the biggest indicator of Bible confidence is reading the Bible regularly. Yeah, like I said, with these kind of Bible mentors as well. So joining people up. But there are warning signs in our data that despite this really positive picture that young Christians are more likely than older Christians to say that their faith is sometimes undermined by the Bible, which is a massive worry. So we've got to really help people put down these roots, because the worst thing would be for people to be exploring now and then it's not working and they leave and I don't think they're coming back. So there's everything to play for. And we think as Bible Society, the Bible must be such a key part of this discipleship kind of journey that people need to go on. And the other thing I would say is prepare for spiritual openness in the community. It's looking warmer than it's done for a long time, that it's okay to have those conversations. People rarely appreciate the approach of, can I tell you about Jesus? Because no one wants to be told anything, right? Like no one wants to be preached to. They are worried they're going to be made to feel wrong. But many people are open to being prayed for. They're open to good conversations. And they're what I see as a researcher over and over again is people really like being asked what they think about God. Like if you're a Christian, you go to church regularly, you have so many spaces to explore these big issues. And many people will be in Bible study groups and you'll be exploring these things all the time. Most people never have those opportunities, and when they are given them, many people really do enjoy it. Now that conversation might not play out how it would in a church, but it can be really meaningful and a fruit that we might not see for many years, but that seed is laid.
I think that's really interesting how that some of those takeaways from the report. Just out of interest, is there a next step for the Bible Society following this particular report? Are there things on the horizon?
Yeah, we've got a few things. We have another piece of work that looked at how Bible confidence works in different dimensions. So we identified through that work you can have kind of Bible confidence of your head. So can you understand the Bible? Do you know how to navigate it, read it? Heart confidence. So does the Bible help you connect with God? And hands confidence. Do you know how to apply it and let it shape you? So we want to release that piece of research and help people understand what grows those various dimensions. So a lot of what I've talked about today does come from that. But yeah, our next step is to really get out and meet people who are grappling with these issues. We've learned so much just from doing the publicity stuff for the Quiet Revival, but it's time for us to do some proper qualitative work and really understand what does the church need from us about the Bible in this missional moment. One thing I've heard a lot from young Christians, especially those who are new to faith, is we want full fat Bible. Like they feel the church waters down the Bible, but they're like, no, we want to go deep. And so we want to understand what that really looks like.
Yeah, that is such an interesting question. And I know that we don't have much time. But when we talk about full fat, are we talking about grappling with deep things about the nature of God? Or are we also talking about grappling thorny issues that our culture struggles to want to talk about or address?
I think it's both. Okay. And I think it's also about understanding the Bible in all its complexities as well. So, I mean, this is only one or two people who've said this to me, so we're not extrapolating it out, but like getting into the Hebrew, getting into the Greek and kind of understanding how there's a twist in a word, like, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And understanding this, the kind of the source languages changes your reading of it. Like just the real hunger to understand how has this amazing kind of gift come together and how can I let that shape me? Yeah. So I think it's all of those things, but there's certainly no simple answers yet.
Yeah. Well, we will be very interested to read that part of your research too. when it is published. Yeah. But just to say thank you very much. I think that the work that you guys have done on producing this report and the time, the effort and the money involved in doing that has been hugely helpful, and hopefully will help stimulate many churches, many Christians to kind of really be thoughtful about how they're going to maximize what is obviously a cultural moment, and take the gospel out and see that it can glorify God. So thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
And we hope that you'll join us next time when we continue on this little short series on the report, A Quiet Revival, when we'll be sitting down and chatting to Stephen Grant about it. And so until then, thank you very much.